The expropriations threats emanating from Venezuela contributed to those rising prices. Chavez also threatened ExxonMobil's share price. If the corporation lost its Venezuelan production and its booked oil reserves in that country, the corporation's publicly reported worldwide oil reserves would shrink. The annual challenge of reserve replacement had not lessened as Tillerson imprinted his leadership on ExxonMobil. If anything, the pressures were rising. Tillerson and other executives might console themselves that expropriations come and go, and that Exxon had left and returned to Venezuela before, yet they would be departing a country proximate to the United States with an oil endowment of enormous size and durability. The numbers from ExxonMobil's current Venezuelan operations were not large, well under 5% of total reserves and production, but with the reserve replacement equation so tight, all losses made a difference, and the shock of being expelled would probably knock down confidence in ExxonMobil shares, which would in turn depress the wealth of executives and employees. The question facing ExxonMobil early in 2007 was whether, for the sake of principle and long-term global strategy, Tillerson and the management committee were prepared, in contrast, to walk. On January 13, 2007, Hugo Chavez told the Venezuelan Congress that he would enforce a law requiring that PDVSA seize majority shares and become the sole operator of all oil projects in the Orinoco River Basin. If the international companies currently in charge of those projects wished to stay on as minority owners, they could renegotiate terms. Chinese, Russian, Indian, Belarusian, Vietnamese, and Cuban operators would be entering the Orinoco Basin, Chavez announced. "He who wants to stay on as our partner, we'll leave open the possibility to him," Chavez said. "He who doesn't want to stay on as a minority partner, hand over the field and goodbye." He added playfully, switching from Spanish to English, "Goodbye, good luck, and thank you very much." In fact, Chavez was prepared to negotiate. Into the spring of 2007, each of the oil majors found itself in maddening, opaque, shifting talks with Venezuela's oil technocrats. Fundamentally, they would have to accept a subordinate position to the Chavez regime for the first time and lower rates of return. Within that framework, however, Chavez was ready to deal. Tillerson and Cut took a two-track approach. They took all the steps necessary to leave Venezuela by the June deadline Chavez had announced, and simultaneously, they negotiated to stay. BP was ExxonMobil's minority, non-operating partner in the Cerro Negro project. The corporation's Venezuelan country manager, Joe Perez, admitted privately that BP's greatest fear was that Exxon would pull out. At this point, he also conceded, BP is basically hiding behind Exxon and its tough-sounding bargaining position. Cut and Tillerson had four options: leave Venezuela and invoke their contractual right to international arbitration to recover their investments and lost earnings, sell their share in Cerro Negro to Venezuela, sell their holding to another company, or accept Chavez's terms and become subordinate to PDVSA in a joint venture. ExxonMobil executives told the U.S. Embassy that the chances they would capitulate this time were close to zero. A sale on terms reasonably close to market price seemed optimal. Under Venezuelan labor laws, if it planned to shut down by the end of June, ExxonMobil had to take public steps as early as March to prepare to lay off workers. Even if its employees found new jobs under Venezuelan management, their compensation and benefits would shrink. Tim Cut rented out the movie theater near the ExxonMobil office, located in downtown Caracas in a mixed-use complex of offices and retail stores, for regular all-staff meetings, replete with popcorn, to keep the employees informed. He provided updates on the corporation's by now almost continuous negotiations with the Chavez regime over business terms. Carlos Rodriguez, ExxonMobil's Venezuelan-born, U.S.-educated government affairs director, and Milton Chavez, another Venezuelan who worked on government relations from Houston, sometimes joined or supported Cut's presentations. From some of the employees, Cut and his colleagues heard angry, even menacing complaints. Cut became so anxious about the loyalty of his own workforce that he installed a metal detector at the entrance of the executive suite. The corporation's expatriate executives worried, too, that they might be arrested suddenly in Caracas, and perhaps made the objects of some theatrical show trial concocted by Chavez. They kept cell phone and emergency numbers for the petroleum attaché at the American Embassy, Sean Flatt. Carlos Rodriguez had regular breakfast meetings with Flatt to keep him up to date, but the corporation was wary about being identified with the American Embassy, and so its Caracas managers minimized the embassy liaisons to the most essential matters, such as planning for evacuation, if one was required, because of violence or threats to American employees. In Washington, Tillerson met with Venezuela's ambassador to the United States, Bernardo Alvarez, on May 16th. He told the envoy that ExxonMobil must have a confidentiality agreement with the Chavez regime before it could negotiate in earnest. "We're looking for a win-win solution," Tillerson said, but he warned that the corporation was willing to go to arbitration if it had to do so. Cut confided to the embassy as the final deadline neared that Tillerson and the management committee at headquarters had shown surprising flexibility in attempting to reach a deal with Chavez. The chances of giving in to Venezuela's demands were apparently not so close to zero. For example, Cut disclosed, they would swallow hard and give up rights to international arbitration if all the other deal terms were satisfactory. On June 25th, however, Cut called again to declare that ExxonMobil had given up. The two sides were billions of dollars apart, he said. For the second time in just over three decades, the largest private oil corporation in the world would withdraw from Venezuela, a country that might hold the world's largest reserves, or was at least second to Saudi Arabia, where ExxonMobil also had not a single barrel of bookable reserves.